Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Happy New Year, folks. I don't know if you knew this or not, but it's 2020. It's a new decade. But it's the same old Outkick, which means it's that same old great Outkick. We're coming to you live from the Geico Outkick Studios. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. Clay is back tomorrow. He's enjoying the holiday with his family. So it's time for Jason Martin and Jeff Schwartz. Jeff Schwartz in Charlotte, at Jeff Schwartz on Twitter. I'm Jason Martin and at JMartZone. Happy New Year, Jeff. How are you, my friend?
I'm fantastic. Happy New Year to you, to all our listeners. I feel like you should have said something like, New Year, New Me. And
when I saw your tweet last night. I was out at dinner with my wife, and I saw your tweet about how you're just going to keep being awesome, keep being yourself, and set a high bar. I'm just like, wow, that's a solid work on Twitter right there to end 2019, just trolling the trolls and saying sure you're going to hate teams and hate players.
I'm sure the people were like, this guy. But look, I mean, the thing about New Year's resolutions, right, is they're great and all, and I get why they're done. I understand the motivation behind them. But if you just try to be like your best self, and that sounds a terrible thing, I feel like such a millennial on Instagram speaking like that. But I don't know. I just try to be the best person I can every day. And then you just don't have to worry about making a resolution. I am very much anti-motivational quote guy. I think we might differ on this. It does nothing for me, and it almost goes the opposite direction. So when I see everyone post about how they're going to, you're going to be new me on New Year, I'm going to cut out all the bad people and only positive vibes in 2020. Like, get out of here, people. Come on.
Yeah, well, I've always liked the demotivational posters and things like that. I've always found those to be kind of funny.
Those are great, yes.
Yeah. So I'm not big on the motivational necessarily stuff, a little bit more on the scripture side of it, but I see that from a different perspective. But yeah, I probably should have let off and just said, by the way, today's show is not a publicity stunt. You know, there's actually something behind this, because Antonio Brown has said that the Saints workout is a publicity stunt, even while we know he took a camera crew to document said publicity stunt by the Saints on Friday. I don't know what this is, man. You know, we're going to talk a lot of NFL. We're going to break down these wild card games, talk about the playoffs, maybe rank these teams in order of how we see them right now. And then there's all sorts of personnel changes happening, because that's what happens when seasons end in the NFL that you didn't like how they went. People lose jobs and people start getting hired again. So there's a lot to get to today. But just the fact that AB felt the need to, like, burn the Saints bridge that never existed is kind of hilarious to me, and it just again reinforces why in the world would you want to put that kind of a cancer, that kind of a poison on your team? Because his dad had come out and said, you know, he hit rock bottom. He's going to be okay, but rock bottom for a little while, but he just wants to get back out there and play the game he loves. He doesn't want to get out there and play the game he loves, because if he did, he would stop doing some of these things that are just basically shooting himself in the foot. He can't get out of his own way.
Well, there's a lot of things to unpack with Antonio Brown. There's something else going on, and there's no reason to speculate on that, but I think everyone thinks that something else is going on that's not beyond football. But, you know, Clay says something that I think is really important when we discuss athletes and whether they get second chances in sports, and he says, your talent will outweigh your problems, your problems outweigh your talents, right? He said that for years now. It's a great line of his. I use it a lot quite often, and that's the way the NFL is, right? Is that until you're, and we saw it with the Ray Rice situation where, you know, he was not given a second chance in the NFL because he was a 30-year-old running back. We saw Greg Hardy get another chance in the NFL because he was a good player, even though the allegations that he went, he was found guilty and the case eventually was thrown out on appeal. But, you know, players all the time, we saw Kareem Hunt, we've seen it all the time where players get a second chance in the NFL because they're supremely talented. And Antonio Brown, will still get a chance in the NFL next year. I'm telling you, if the NFL clears him in the investigation they're doing into allegations off the field, he will get a job in the NFL next year. But he's a good example, Jason, of kind of a player who's addicted to social media. I love social media, right? I use it all the time. I'm currently trying to like grow my Instagram following a little bit more. Like, I understand the idea of wanting more followers and feeling the need to post all the time and share your life. I get all that. I do a fair amount of that on Twitter. I would call myself a high volume tweeter. And, but I also understand it's not real life and I have an actual life and a family and it's not that serious, but he's an example of a player and of this generation that he'd rather be a social media star than be an NFL star right now. And he'd rather get that satisfaction in life from people telling him how great he is on social media, right? Fake people, fake friends, people that really don't matter emotionally, should not matter emotionally to him in the end. And we're seeing this more and more with players now. I know Adam Silver has complained, and the NBA commissioner has complained about the way that his players respond to social media. And I think Antonio Brown's a great example of this, right? Imagine Drew Rosenhaus, his agents talk to him. Imagine his friends, his dad, and he just doesn't get it. He likes that satisfaction. It's really fake gratification from social media that he gets. And when he learns it's not real, and I don't know when he will, maybe he'll change his ways because he's talented enough. Look, if there were no allegations right now, let's say the NFL came out today on New Year's and said, hey, guys, we've cleared Antonio Brown. The Patriots would sign him tomorrow. They'd sign him today. He would be on the Patriots. They do not care about his tweets about Robert Kraft. He'd be on the Patriots, ready to play the Titans this weekend that quickly.
Yeah, they may need him as well. But yeah, and the Adam Silver stuff about social media. Now, I discussed that on my Sunday Morning Fox show. I've discussed it in a lot of different places. We've talked about it before. It can be a very good thing when you look at, J.J. Watt raising a lot of money for disaster relief and things of that nature. And then there are a lot of people out there that want to do good, that want to bring you good journalism. You think about The Athletic and what a great value that is, and just how it has changed the way we, The Athletic's just kind of what we do for a living, Jeff. When we wake up in the morning, we probably check The Athletic every day because there's generally going to be something to read there that's going to give us, well, maybe it's going to give us something that we can talk about on the air, but it's also just going to be well done. And it's from a lot of people that are veterans from newspapers and magazines and television and all of them in one place. And it's good. It's brought all these things together. And then there's the negative side of social media, which is the extremes politically, the extremes socially, and just the loudest voices who think that, who make you believe if you don't get out of the bubble long enough to think, they make you believe that that's how life actually is. And it isn't. And for AB and some of these people, you're right. I think that your gratification point is right. It's instant gratification. It is also just a place to get sucked into your own ego, this pride that you can't get out of your own way some of the time. Yeah. But just the videos and some of the stuff, like the best thing could happen to him is just get out of there. Just stop dealing with it. Stop. I thought the same thing about Kevin Durant. If you get angry every time somebody says something critical about you, then why in the world would you have a social media account at all? Like, what is the benefit of that? Because all it's going to do is drive you down a cesspool.
It does feel good. Because I do it from time to time to tell people to F off, right, on Twitter and Instagram. I get that. But I decided a couple months ago, and I've actually been better about this, about just not going after people, just blocking them and muting them. Because, people don't like to see that all the time. Now, it's fun every night. I dunked on someone yesterday or a couple days ago.
Yeah, you dunked on somebody. Was it Sunday you dunked on that one guy? You hadn't been doing it a lot. That was the worst of Twitter is how you described it. I can't remember what the disagreement
that guy
was.
Oh, yeah, who just wanted to argue over something. Yeah, he just wanted to argue, and I call him a moron. But otherwise, I've been pretty good about that because I got to a point where I realized, trust me, it's a lot of fun to dunk on someone and then have all Twitter be like, yeah, you got him, Schwartz. Yeah. It's fun. But then I realized, my followers probably don't like that. In the end, sometimes probably fun because I think they love to do that too to people on Twitter and just don't feel the comfortable doing that. But in the end, like, that's not really, I was like, it's probably not worth it all the time. It's a bad look. And then, you know, politics, I stopped that about 2 years ago. If the president does something goofy or funny, I'll subtweet him or something, and, you know, something silly. And if it revolves sports, I might talk about it. I mean, look, it's hard to ignore that sports and politics often collide. And I might talk about some Jewish things on that are considered political on Twitter, but more in a joking or mocking manner. But it's not worth it on social media. And I hope that we get to a point where we start understanding more of that as athletes. Like I said, it's fun to do it every now and then. I think it's appropriate to do it every now and then because, Clay talks about this too. I've felt this way too. You know, and I said this on Twitter, you know, someone will talk to me in an inappropriate manner on social media. That same person will see me in public and ask for my picture and selfie and, you know, like want to be my best friend. And so that's just a lot of fakeness on social media. And when athletes realize that, I think they'll be better off. I've seen siblings get into it with other athletes. It's just, guys, it doesn't make sense to do all that. It doesn't. I have to be better at it too. Maybe that's my actual New Year's resolution. It's not, but maybe that should be.
Well, you and Coach O said his New Year's resolution was to eat less, and he's not going to do it.
I love it, Orjordan. He recruited me at USC. So he was at USC in Pete Carroll years, and I was being recruited by USC. And actually, as much as I dislike USC and my parents went to UCLA, if USC had offered me, I probably would have gone. I mean, they were at the heyday. It was 2004 of kind of their winning. And I was they had five redshirting offensive linemen, and they had one guy committed. They had one spot left, and I was second in line for that spot. So they kept recruiting me until that day. They were actually the most honest with any team I've been with. Ed Orgeron told me from the beginning, he goes, "Hey, look," he'd tell me that, look, he goes, we have one spot available. We like a guy in front of you. If he commits, you're out. We'll tell you when that happened. And they did. They told me when it happened, like in November, and they stopped recruiting me. He called me every Monday, though, at 7:20 without fail. Every Monday night, 7:20 p.m., he called me without fail. And it was fun to talk to Ed. Really, and what he's done this year at LSU, I think it's an important lesson for coaches. And I wonder if you know, we have NFL coaching hires right now, and what, you know, coaches, you know, Ron Rivera's in Washington now, what he learned from his first time. And I think he did a great job in Carolina. But, you know, I think Ed Orgeron realized that his first time around, and then obviously his first year at LSU, that, like, I just need to be CEO. I need to hire the great people. And he did that, right? He hired Joe Brady. He just hands off. Like, I'm going to be the CEO of the program. I'm going to recruit my butt off. I'm going to be the face of the program. And the awareness of a coach to do that is supremely impressive, in my opinion. And I hope that Oregon plays Wisconsin today. I'm an Oregon grad. You know, Mark Cristobal has to hire an offensive coordinator coming up, but I kind of hope he goes in that direction too, where he's an offensive line coach. You know, Ed Orgeron's a defensive line coach. Hey, man, be inspirational. Be fiery. I've seen Mark Cristobal before a game. He looks like a former offensive lineman out there. He is frothing at the mouth, right? And I think Ed Orgeron's the same way. And Ed's done a great job, just hands off. I'm going to coach you. I'm going to motivate you. I'm going to set a tone for the program. But guess what? I'm going to let someone run the defense. I'm going to let someone run the offense. And the awareness to do that, really impressive. And I don't think he gets enough credit for doing that, for being that aware.
Yeah, another thing that Orgeron has done that has not gotten nearly as much attention as bringing in Joe Brady and just not being stubborn enough to think that he knew everything and bringing in smart people and surrounding him is he brought John Robinson out. He brought John Robinson, the SC John Robinson, who really had not been around the scene for a while, and John Robinson ends up moving to Baton Rouge to be a consultant for LSU.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
The USC, like, legendary coach?
Correct. Yeah, legendary SC coach, John Robinson.
I did not know that.
He's been a consultant. Yeah, exactly. It has not been talked about very much at all, but I've spoken to a couple of people that knew John Robinson and have been in the league for a long, long, long time, NFL and college, and they talked about how instrumental and under the radar that move really helped solidify everything because it was a guy that also helped Ed Orgeron learn how to be a head coach, like to structure the organizational side, to be the CEO, to be that guy, and to help him through some of the learning curve that it comes with being in that job. And they've said that it's hugely important what John Robinson has been able to bring. And Robinson hadn't been around the scene in a minute. But all of the moves that Orgeron has made have been good ones. And I don't know that he has gotten enough credit because we immediately start talking about Joe Brady and we start talking about Burrow, obviously. But you can't do this. I mean, look at the Browns. The Browns had some talent, but they also had the wrong coach. And we can talk about that and just how badly that has gone and what it's going to mean for Baker Mayfield going forward that John Dorsey is no longer going to be in that position. But you can see a lot of places where there's been talent that has been either misused or completely wasted because the wrong guy has been in charge. And when Ed Orgeron was hired, I didn't think that was going to work out, but I've sat there and watched him, and Ed Orgeron feels like LSU, and I thought that's why they made the hire. But what it turns out is Ed Orgeron was smart enough to know what he didn't know. He was smart enough to know what other people did know. And the worst thing that you can do in your life is surround yourself with people that aren't as smart as you are and don't challenge you and maybe even sometimes don't make you a little bit jealous of what they can bring. And Orgeron didn't do that. He brought in super smart people that at times have taken some of the spotlight away from him, and now they're sitting here, you know, 11 days away from playing for a national championship.
Right, and I think the awareness of doing everything you said is so important as a coach and even as a person, right? To have the awareness that you need to do something differently and be an adult enough to make those changes, right? And LSU is playing at such a high level right now, and that was the most impressive offensive performance I've ever seen in an important game. I know Oklahoma, probably not very good. I mean, look, they're good, obviously, in the playoff, but not. There's three very great teams in college football, and there's the rest of the teams in college football. But I mean, that was so impressive, and I think that, you know, LSU Clemson is going to be a fantastic ball game. But what they've done this year, I mean, I think that you look at single seasons in college football. You know, Tebow, Cam Newton, I think Joe Burrow is up there or better than those guys as far as single seasons that are ones to remember.
Oh, yeah. No, I absolutely agree. And maybe we'll talk some about maybe not that game necessarily, but targeting and some of the things that came out of that second semifinal game. Pretty impressive. Another thing, I just looked up here just a second ago. We're going to get to break now, but I saw Ed Werder on the screen on ESPN, which means that there's time to talk about the Cowboys. I spoke to Ed. He's great. I talked to Ed last year on Radio Row.
He's great, yes.
Yeah, great. And so Jerry Jones has met with Jason Garrett again, and they're still talking about an uncertain future, and they're not sure what's going to happen. I don't understand this. I don't know that anyone does. But we're going to try to parse it, and we're going to get into some of these personnel changes and situations, and then we'll talk about the games with the teams that are actually pretty good that are still playing football. So there's still a lot to get to today. Jeff's at Jeff Schwartz. I'm at JMartZone. The show is at Outkick. Happy New Year to you from all of us to all of you. We'll be right back here on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back to the Geico Outkick Studios. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Geico.com is where you can get yourself a free rate quote. Jeff Schwartz, Jason Martin in with you here on Outkick the Coverage to start off the decade. First edition of Outkick 2020. First edition maybe of anything that you've heard in 2020. Jeff, what's Utah doing? Maybe they didn't care. I don't know. I don't know what happened, but that was ugly.
I thought to myself, like, What news did Utah do? I was like, what happened overnight with Utah?
They made news by getting their rear ends polished by Texas.
It took me about 3 seconds to realize you're talking about the football team, the Utah football team. We've seen now the loser of the Pac-12 championship game has now lost all 9 of their bowl games. Good Lord. The letdown is real. And a lot of these games have not been close. The letdown is real. And we've seen the last 2 years, by the way, the SEC runner-up has lost their bowl game, right? We lost, saw Auburn lost UCF. We saw Texas last year beat Georgia handily as well. Yeah. There's just, I think the motivation is just not there. So think about this from Utah's, and I know people are like, oh, Utah, they play football. Yeah, they do. This was their year to win the Pac-12 championship. They had not won a Pac-12 title since they have been in the conference, since, you know, for 9 years now. And they had built everything up this season to do that. They're a senior-laden team, senior quarterback, senior running back, two best players on defense, seniors, and I think actually their third best player on defense, also a senior. And they had built this year up to win the conference championship. And they were fifth in the country, and they were talking about them going to a playoff before Oregon absolutely dominated them in the Pac-12 title game. And I just think their motivation for this bowl game, and this is my favorite bet of bowl season. I tweeted it out before it happened and during the game. You know, the motivation for Utah was just not there. They're, like I said, a team that's probably has a lot of guys that are already thinking about the NFL. Their two best defensive backs did not play in this game. One injured, one already thinking about the NFL. And this just made all the sense in the world they were going to get crushed in this game. I'm not surprised. One thing that we do during bowl season, I think we probably should stop, is outside of the playoffs and maybe a couple of games, is making indictments over the entire state of a conference based off a bowl game. Like,
right.
This doesn't do anything for the Pac-12. Who cares? Just like Texas is not back because they beat Utah.
Yeah, well, I mean, every year Texas is back because they win some random bowl game. Like, they beat Georgia. Now they're back. Yeah, no, they really weren't. That's just kind of the way it is. And then you look at the games today, and I look at it the same way. I mean, obviously there are some fun games, and there are some big games that I guess matter to some people, but really, I just continue to say, now that the college football playoff is what it is and the way that things have been built, you care about those two semis and you care about that championship game. And then outside of that, it's just maybe half the kids care, maybe three quarters of them care. But if you were a high-rated draft pick, why would you play? Like, I'm thinking about Alabama's receivers. Why would they care to play against Michigan today?
I'm actually very surprised they are playing.
It doesn't make any sense, right? I mean, it seems like everything to lose, because who cares if you win the, I don't even know how you pronounce VRBO, because I've never even heard of the company before. The Verbo Citrus Bowl today between Michigan and Alabama. Like, that would be interesting, except it's not. I mean, I have seen two versions of Alabama when they're not in a national championship situation. One, where they don't really care and they can get beaten by, for example, a Utah back in the day. Or they go absolutely annihilate Michigan State, like 59-3, like, just because they're mad. So I don't know which one shows up, but I also, who cares? Like, who is it, a bragging rights thing? I don't even think it is, because it's basically an exhibition game that means less than any game that those two teams played all season.
Well, I think that there are certain, like, for example, Oregon plays Wisconsin. Oregon needs to win the Rose Bowl. Like, that, this is a program building moment with a young coach. And kind of a statement game for Mario Cristobal. But your point about Alabama, like, they don't need to win this game. Like, for what? Next year they're going to be ranked in the top three. They get USC in a week one. They're going to smash USC, and they'll just continue on their way. This is an opportunity, I think, for young players to get a chance to play for Alabama. And I think that to me feels like what today's game will. And for Michigan, you know, probably. For Harbaugh and recruiting, this is probably a good win. If they get this win, right, they can sell this that, you know, that they're going the right direction. They beat an SEC program. But otherwise, a lot of these bowl games don't mean as much as we think they do. They're fun to it's fun to talk about them meaning a lot, but they really don't.
I mean, there's four games today. They're not bad matchups. I mean, Minnesota-Auburn's got its own appeal, I suppose. Michigan-Alabama is Harbaugh versus Saban. So there's storyline there. Oregon-Wisconsin is a sneaky good ball game, and I can see your point about Oregon needing a kind of statement win to sort of solidify where the program is headed with a coach that is still sort of on the come up, if he wants to go J. Cole. And then Georgia-Baylor, that one is perfect example of which one of those two teams wants to be there.
Baylor,
that's the way I see it, and I feel like it's very likely that Baylor wins that game simply because Georgia probably doesn't feel like it. Well, I mean, I think that they had aspirations for something else, and Baylor may have outperformed what they expected to do this year.
Which is exactly the problem that they had, you know, the SEC losers had in these bowl games, is that the apathy of being there. You know, I've been in a situation before. We were in the Vegas Bowl in 2006, and we were 7-5. We had a disappointing year, and there was actually talk, and it was ridiculous, but as we started to struggle down the stretch, a lot of players were like, guys, like, if we just lose more games, we'll go to the Vegas Bowl. We'll have more fun at the Vegas Bowl. And the Vegas Bowl, by the way, is a terrible matchup for the Pac-12. I know that Washington won this year, but it's Pac-12 6 against Mountain West 1. And like, they really want to beat the Pac-12, and we're just there to party at the Venetian. And we didn't care at all. We lost 38-8, I think, I want to say, to BYU. Humiliating. But we just didn't. Guys didn't want to be there, and BYU did. And it's kind of the thing with bowls, is that a lot of this comes to motivation, is who wants to be there, who doesn't. And for, you know, Alabama today, for Georgia, the motivation just might not be there. But for their counterparts, it is going to be there. And so interesting to see how today plays out.
Well, that's exactly why I looked at that. And it's very similar, but like when Auburn played Central Florida, and that was Central Florida just took down an SEC team that was near the top of the conference. They were undefeated. It's like, no, Auburn didn't care about playing against Central Florida in your Peach Bowl that year, because the Peach Bowl wasn't part of the discussion for the national championship that year. I mean, I think explain this to me, because nobody's going half speed. That's a, you know, that's a dangerous way to look at it. But when you say don't care, how does that translate on the field? Like, if you're out there and you don't necessarily want to be there, it's not where you thought you were going to end up, you're a little disappointed, so it's not a game that you can get yourself up for. Like, how does that work in your own mind while you're on the football field?
Well, I actually think it's a lack of preparation heading into the bowl game. So it's not really like the game itself, but when you're not motivated to prepare for the game as well as you would a different opponent, you know, you're just a little bit lax with your technique in practice. You're a little bit lax with all the film you're watching. You're just not as sharp as you should be. And then when it comes to game day, you know, your preparation that you thought you did is not good enough to win the game. And you come out and you come out flat. You come out unexcited. You come out not inspired. And that's why I think where it shows up, you know, guys, to your point, they're not playing any less hard, but they're just not as prepared as they should be to make adjustments, to be physical. I mean, you have to get in the right mindset to go out and hit someone for 3 hours. And if you're not mentally prepared to do that, you're just a tad slower to the ball. You just don't want to make that tackle. Don't want to finish that block. And I think that's where you see a lot of it. So again, it's not really that guys are playing like less hard per se during the game. They don't prepare mentally just quite the same way. And look, if you're just off by a tiny bit in your preparation, you're just not going to play as well. It's plain and simple. Just like if we were off a tiny bit preparing for the show, we just didn't, you know, we didn't do that little bit of research. We didn't watch the game, or we didn't read that story. It'll come off on our radio segment. Just naturally will. Right. And I think that's the same way for players. It's just the preparation part of it. And, that's what I think you're going to see today with the SEC teams. And it's weird to say that, because I mean, if you look at Alabama should blow out Michigan, and there's a possibility they do, but, on paper, they definitely should blow them out. But who knows what will happen when they actually get to the game?
Yeah, exactly. And Harbaugh has struggled in bowl games, especially at Michigan. So maybe he actually cares about this just to have a positive feeling exiting this season. Minnesota Auburn to me looks like another spot where PJ Fleck's team wants to be there. Maybe they didn't think they were going to be quite this good. And Auburn at 12 playing against Minnesota. How do you get yourself up for the Outback Bowl against the Minnesota Golden Gophers? Maybe Auburn shows up. If they do, then they should beat Minnesota fairly handily. But I don't. Well, I mean, I think they should. I know Minnesota's pretty decent, but I don't think they have the talent level that Auburn does across the field, especially up front. But, you know, we'll find out. Hopefully these will be some good games. At least, you know, while you're sitting around eating and hanging out with family or whatever, hopefully we're going to be treated to some decent football.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Cannonball from the Breeders bringing us back in. Final segment of hour number one. Outkick the Coverage. January 1st, 2020 is upon us. Jeff Schwartz, Jason Martin in for Clay Travis. Clay's back tomorrow. Reading this from Dallas Morning News. Quote, Jason Garrett has been a long-term, very important, pleasant part of my life, certainly in sport and in football. By and through him being a player here, by and through what he's been as a coach, what he's been as a working associate. He's just got a great place for me, and that's if he's coaching 10 more years for the Cowboys or if he's not. He's done that. We've had that kind of life together, and it's great, unquote. And then the article. Jerry Jones adores Garrett. It's something that should be taken into account when this whole thing ends. Jones was not going to dump Garrett on Sunday night after beating Washington. He was going to give Garrett a chance to speak to a group of players who became men under him. Jones wasn't going to do it on Monday or Tuesday after meeting with him privately. Jones wanted to make sure he gave Garrett every chance to make his case to stay. Jones believes Garrett will get another job somewhere. New York Football Giants, anyone? Before he departs, the Cowboys organization will do right by a guy they groomed to become the head coach. And then it continues on from there. I don't get this at all. I know Jerry Jones loves Jason Garrett because he's been there for 9 years. I don't know that people realize how long he has actually been there to have done as little as he's done as it relates to what the Cowboys have been able to do in the playoffs. But this has to be a foregone conclusion, Jeff. And we've got Ed Werder, you know, standing down there continuing to say, yep, they've had a second meeting and they haven't made a decision yet. Like, what do you mean they haven't made a decision yet? What exactly is going on here?
Jason Garrett's contract expires soon. So the feeling is that they're just going to let his contract expire, and then they're not technically firing him, and they're moving on. This kind of shows you, I think, why the Cowboys have failed over the last 20 years. It's emotional attachment to players, to coaches, when you need to have a little bit more cold-bloodedness in your bones, right? You see Bill Belichick all the time get rid of players that he feels are not ready, you know, to contribute, even when we think they're in their prime. He's made some mistakes, right? Chandler Jones had 19 and a half sacks this year in Arizona. I mean, there's guys that he's traded away or let go who have not been as good, but there's all situations where he does do that and it tends to work out for his team. So Jerry Jones is just too attached to Jason Garrett. And I understand that he loves him like a son and all that stuff, but you got to have the conversation. Like, I don't know why they're still meeting all the time. What are they meeting about?
What are we talking about here?
You didn't do your job. Bye-bye. And I think that this shows you, A, the Cowboys are too emotional with their decisions with, you know, coaches and players. And if they're not decided yet on what to do with him, then they must not have been watching football this season. And I think the longer it plays out, the more likely that he stays, even though I don't think he will. But also, don't you want to move on with your coaching search? Don't you want to call Matt Rhule up and call? And I know Matt Rhule's was playing today. Don't you want to beat the Giants to Matt Rhule? Sure, Urban Meyer already said no. Lincoln Riley just played in their game, so maybe he's more willing to talk now. But I think it just shows that, again, no plan for the Cowboys. And I just, you gotta pull the band-aid at some point. It you can't always be.
You're doing nobody any favors at this point. Right. I don't even know that you're doing Jason Garrett any favors, because these are the kinds of talking points that are out there about him every single day. Maybe he can coach somewhere else. Maybe he can be a coach somewhere else. I have no idea. I just know that he has gotten the longest leash you have ever seen down there, seemingly just because Jerry Jones likes having him around and attaboying him every once in a while when they win a game or, you know, give them the wink and the gun as they're walking down the hallway or whatever. But they've got to start winning football games there at some point. They have a lot of talent. They're paying a lot of guys big money, and they have some decisions to make. And you still think that even with all that comes with being the coach of the Cowboys past just coaching an NFL team, dealing with Jerry and all that, there's still a reason to want to go there. I mean, with Dak certainly and Zeke in the fold and all of what you've got down there, it's not like the cupboard is bare and you have a bunch of really terrible personalities you don't want to be around, at least not from what I can tell. I mean, Dak seems to be a real affable guy that you could potentially build around at quarterback. And Jones is really the big personality that maybe you wouldn't want to be around. But Garrett, the leash Garrett has, I mean, I thought Jay Gruden had been there a long time in Washington. Nothing compared to Jason Garrett in Dallas. And I think we all sense that he is going to be gone. So the dog and pony show doesn't do anything for me. It's just like, why are we dragging this deal out? And you're absolutely right. Why would you want to not be going through your coaching search publicly and out there while other candidates might be getting snatched up or getting enticed by other organizations?
Exactly. And again, too much emotional investment in Jason Garrett. I get it. He's your boy, but it's time to move on, Cowboys. Just get over with.
Yeah, I mean, look, the first three Indiana Jones films were great. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was an abomination that should be on the bottom of, I don't know, Hades somewhere, seventh level of hell. It was a terrible movie. I might have a fondness for Indiana Jones, the franchise. Doesn't mean I didn't think Kingdom of the Crystal Skull sucked. Jason Garrett is Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. We'll be right back.